and it is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, back in the host seat. Happy to be back. We have always Bruce Helmer, the founder of Wealth Enhancement and financial advisor, and senior vice president and financial advisor Peg Webb. Hello and welcome back. Nice to have you both on again. And I know you want to tell us about a special guest you have with us this week. Bruce, Peg, yes. Good morning.
Yeah. Good morning, Susie. I'm excited to have you back. Hello, Bruce.
Hi, Peg. Hello, Susie Jones. Yes, Susie, you are always missed when you're not here. The legendary Denny Long always does a great job also, but we love Susie, and it's good to be back with Susie. And you're right, Susie. Thanks for the lead-in. Really, I think, Peg, really interesting, really good topic today. The title of the show is called No Regrets Exit Planning. Now, what do we mean by that? So people that own a business, small business owners, or maybe you're just an employee that's been with a company for a really long time. You worked for 3M for 30 years, or maybe there's a lot of equity or a lot of stock in a company, and you're worried about the next generation, you're worried about or concerned about your retirement. Wealth Enhancement has a lot of clients that are like this, business owners or senior employees with a lot of equity in a particular company. And how do you plan for that? You know, whether the business sells, whether you sell your stock or stock options, whether the next generation is going to inherit stock, this can be, you know, complicated. It's a blessing to have this equity and to have this money, but it also leads to planning opportunities. And I don't think we talk about this enough. And that's why I'm excited about the topic today. And we're really fortunate to have a special guest. Paul Braham and I have not met face-to-face, but we've worked together from a distance. Paul's the managing director at Wealth Enhancement. He's in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He works with CEOs and executives on retirement, succession, financial wellness. Paul's been a president of the Financial Planning Association right now in 2025. He's worked with the Vistage Chief Executive Group since 2014. Many of you might be familiar with Vistage. Paul, really, really good topic, and we're really fortunate to have you with us today to help us decipher this potentially complicated issue for folks. Paul, welcome.
Thanks, Bruce. I'm thrilled to be here, and thanks, Peggy, and thanks, Susie. Appreciate it very much.
Yeah, so we live through all these clients' lives. You know, it's the ups, it's the downs. But people who own companies or they have a big, you know, career in a particular company, and you can tell that they've spent their whole life and very proud of what they've done. But then it comes to, there's such an emotional feeling about letting go. You know, sometimes you know that it's time, but yet you've spent decades of time at these companies. So let's start off by just talking about some of the challenges that these folks have.
Oh, sure. You know, if you're a business owner, chances are you probably haven't looked very hard at the value of your business because you're not thinking about selling it. You're in it day to day, but you don't really know what it's worth. And often, very often, we get a sense of what it's worth from our friends who own businesses or maybe sold a business. And that comes from their perspective, not the actual perspective of your business. And so what that can often mean is that you take that business to market, you want to sell it to someone, whether that's internal or external, and then you find out it's not saleable because we haven't looked at it through the lens of a buyer. And if we do sell it, the research tells us that about 76% of sellers regret selling within 12 months. And it's for a couple of reasons. Everybody points to, I didn't get enough money. Everybody points to valuation. But that's not the principal driver. The driver of that regret is not knowing what's next. What am I exiting to? Not what am I exiting from? Where will I have that head and heart connection that creates purpose and creates legacy? right? There's this notion, right, this important idea that we have to have vision, right, for that next chapter in our lives. And we find that this is this sense of regret when we exit our businesses, when we exit our very meaningful jobs, whether we are ESOP shareholders in our company, whether we are executives who have concentrated stock positions, whether, you know, whether we sell our business, we all have this sense of regret because we haven't thought about the purpose in our next step. And that's why we think it's important to begin with the end in mind, right? To really think about what's my end game? And when we have clarity around that, we can align our financial decisions and our business decisions with that clarity of purpose and experience and no regrets exit.
And a lot of times it's your baby, right? You've identified yourself with this business, and it's just such a big part of your life. So how do you create this longer term vision? I have to tell you, a lot of these people who own businesses or have these concentrated stock options, they're actually having fun, right? They love what they're doing.
Yeah.
But then that day comes where they're saying, wait a minute, I'm not thinking as clearly. I mean, they're only talking to themselves, right? They're not thinking as clearly. You've kind of maybe built these successors and they're kind of pushing you to, okay, hand it over, those kinds of things. What would you say to this person when they come to talk to us?
I think people come to talk to us, Peg, and they think it's all about the numbers, right? Can I afford this? Can I afford that? How do I structure my investments? What about my taxes? All super important questions, big issues for us to work through. But the bigger issue is, you know, if we think of, say, Simon Sinek, right? Simon Sinek talks about us finding our why. If we go back through history, we see all kinds of people talk about this notion of purpose and why. Stephen Covey says, begin with the end in mind. Maslow's hierarchy of needs from, you know, decades ago talked about self-actualization. Even the Bible says, without a progressing vision, you will dwell carelessly. So what do? I think we have to have an honest conversation about purpose. We have to explore what's important about money to us. We have to understand how the resources from that exit can be applied to something meaningful in our lives. Peg, we actually have an assessment called a Personal Readiness for Exit Assessment. And it walks people through understanding their push factors. What's pushing me out of this business? Maybe it's declining health, the need to care for a loved one. Maybe it's a little bit of burnout, right? Maybe, right? Maybe it's a change in the way that the company is progressing and it doesn't fit with who we are. Those are push factors. Then we have to consider pull factors, right? Pull factors are those things that make us excited to move into that next chapter. And we have to begin to identify those. Is it family? Is it your spouse? Is it your grandkids? Is it travel? Is it volunteer work? Is it philanthropy, right? Is it getting my hands dirty to make a difference in the world through Habitat for Humanity or my volunteer work somewhere? Right. Maybe it's simply a new business venture that's a passion for us as opposed to a profession for us. But we need to think very hard about those pull factors and then get clarity on what we need in terms of financial resources to live into those pull factors. And as I said, we have an assessment that's on our website, the Personal Readiness for Exit Score, that helps us explore those things. And if we're smart about this, we'll think about that 5, 10, 15 years before our planned exit, and we'll begin to explore those things by spending some time volunteering, right? By looking at the activities that we want to engage in and say, can I do this for the rest of my life? And that assessment helps us identify those things and walk through those things and put together a plan for those things.
If you join this late and you're a regular listener of Your Money and you hear a voice you don't recognize, it belongs to Paul Bram. Paul is the Managing Director at Wealth Enhancement. He works with business owners and professional associations, and we're talking about no regrets exit planning. Paul, Peg made an, I think, fantastic point a few minutes ago about this is my baby. This, you know, I created this, and there's an emotional attachment, and there's always a, if I lose control of this, is who's ever going to run it next going to do things to my baby that I don't like and that I wouldn't agree with? And we've talked a little bit about that, but that also then segues into, and you've been kind of dancing around this also, valuation. When we possess something, when we own something, our perception of the value may not be the same as the rest of the world's perception of the value, right? Because we have a vested interest. We have an emotional attachment. We maybe can't be objective. Speak to that a little bit as we segue into things that people can do to have a no regrets exit. Paul?
2 years ago, Bruce, a man hired me. He was part of a Vistage Chief Executive Group. He ran a business that had about $55 million in sales, and those sales were growing. He was 60 years old, not one estate document in place, no wills, no powers of attorney, no trust, no living wills, no healthcare power of attorney, no plan whatsoever. He had three kids, six grandkids. He was divorced, and his girlfriend had been living with him for 10 years in California, which creates a whole nother community property issue. And he wanted an estate plan. I met with his general counsel. His general counsel says, thank God we're doing this. I've been asking him to do this for over a decade. So we began that process of creating an estate plan. So we talked about valuation, because how can you do an estate plan if you don't know your net worth? Importantly, about 80% of a business owner's net worth is tied up in that highly concentrated, illiquid, low basis position. So you have to include a reasonable valuation in order to build an estate plan. So he told me it was worth $37 million. We go to work, we come back, we build an estate plan, working with our estate planning specialists at Wealth Enhancement, the lawyers, the CFPs, and we put together an estate plan based on his total net worth. 3 minutes into the conversation, Bruce, he waves me off and he says, you know, I've been thinking, Paul, it's really worth $55 million. So you need to go back to work. So we go back to work. We make some adjustments. I'm presenting this estate plan based on $55 million. And he waves me off again. And he said, I was golfing with a friend of mine who recently sold his business. And he believes we can get $75 million for this business. So in the span of 12 weeks, we went from 37 to 55 to 75, and nothing in the business changed except his opinion from a friend. And that really is the state of most owners today. 98% don't know the value of their business. It's their baby, and it might be their ugly baby, but it's their baby, and they generally think it's worth more than it is. So I encouraged him to get a valuation. So we use a tool to do what we call an informal valuation, a platform called BizEquity, and I worked with his chief financial officer to go through that process of doing a valuation. Bruce, it wasn't 37, it wasn't 55, it wasn't 75. Would you believe it was 26? And when the chief financial officer saw it, he said to me, I can't tell him that. He'll fire me. I said, fine, I'll tell him that. And I told him that. What do you think happened, Bruce? Any guess? He didn't fire his... Go ahead. What's your guess?
He didn't want to sell anymore.
No. Right? That would be the appropriate thing. I need to drive the value of the business, right? No, what did he do? He fired me. He fired the messenger. Right? And he said, I'm just going to sell this business. I've done this before. I know how to handle this. Thanks. And I was done. I saw him a year later at a conference for business owners. I was a speaker at that conference. And he sheepishly walked over to me and he said, you know, I've decided to keep the business. You know, we need to connect and get to work. So he rehired me. You know, that was code for nobody wanted it for $75 million, right? And that valuation was, in fact, true. So we don't know it. We often think it's worth more than it is because it's our baby. And we don't have a really good plan for creating best-in-class value. That's what we need to do.
One of the things that I see in a lot of clients that have these businesses is they don't have a strong leadership team. They haven't put mm-hmm. successors in place. And so all of a sudden you say, oh, you know, I'm thinking I want to exit. You know, valuation is one thing, but are you prepared to exit and have successors, Paul?
Yeah, we have two problems inside of businesses, and these two problems are part of the drivers of business value. When you put on, you know, when you look at your business through the lens of a buyer, they want to see a couple of things. They want to see a business that's not dependent on the owner. If the owner went away for 3 months and never even called in or checked email, would the business continue to function? Right? So we want to diversify away owner dependence right to a leadership team. The second challenge that we have is over-reliance on a key employee. And so that comes because we haven't fully operationalized the business. We don't have every process written down from our sales processes to our accounting processes to manufacturing processes. So they're in someone's head, and that creates dependence on that key employee. So when a buyer looks at that business, they're afraid that key employee will leave, as will all of the institutional memory. So the first step in resolving that is to figure out what all those key people do and put it down in writing, put it down in video, put it down on your intranet, right? Your internal website. And then begin to cross train, right? Train and cross train to those processes. Now you diversify away, right? Owner risk. You diversify away key employee risk.
Bruce?
Easier said than done, right?
Yeah.
Easier said than done. But again, there are tools for that, right? We have tools to help owners think through that. And then what do you do? You build, you add on to that professional development and career paths. With the objective of elevating your people to their highest and best use, and then elevating yourself as that owner to a strategic role where you can function in your highest and best use. And now that goes a long way to making that business more valuable and more sellable, right? You have more options that way.
Paul, another thing that you've got here and that we want to get to, and we're not going to be able to do them all. We've only got a couple minutes left before we need to take a break. But you've actually compiled a list of 10 what you call essential insights for a no-regrets exit. I think we've kind of mentioned some of them, but maybe we want to kind of go through each item on the list in the second half of the show. And I also should tell people that if you're not a business owner, but you're a key executive or you've been with the company a lot of years or you have a lot of stock or stock options, a lot of these same things are going to be applicable to you. But maybe we can knock off one or two before we go to break and finish the list when we come back. Paul?
Absolutely. You know, it begins with defining your why. Whether you're retiring, you're selling your business, how are you going to pivot to something that connects your head and heart with purpose? You need to think about timing. Are you really exit ready, right? Personally and financially, are you ready to move to that next step? And then get a handle on all of your numbers. If you're a business owner, what's your valuation, right? If you're a key executive or potentially a retiring employee, what does your financial picture look like? And that includes risk mitigation, tax, investment, retirement plans, and your estate plan, right? And then if you're a business owner specifically, right, take a look at that valuation and understand what's my fair market value, my asset sale value, my enterprise value, and my liquidation value. Yeah.
Let's pause here. We'll take a break, and then we'll finish the list and final thoughts, and we'll get listeners involved a little bit in the second half of the show also, Susie.
All right, very good. 651-461-9226. If you have a question for our special guest, maybe a comment, maybe you've gone through it, 651-461-9226. We're back with Your Money after this. And we are back. It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, along with Bruce Helmer and Peg Webb. Bruce, of course, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor, senior vice president and financial advisor Peg Webb. Also with us, as always, every week, and our special guest, Bruce. Peg, do you want to recap where we are and continue on? And we'll see if we can also get listeners involved, as you say, Bruce. So welcome back to all.
Thank you, Susie Jones. Thank you for hanging in there, listeners. If you are just joining us or joined us late, today we're talking about no regrets exit planning. That means business owners, senior employees with equity in the company, heirs to a family business with a significant portion of their net worth tied to a single company. This applies to a lot of people, and we're talking about exit planning and how to do it right. We'd started to put together a list, but first I want to reintroduce our specialist, our guest on this. Paul Bram is a managing director of strategic referral programs at Wealth Enhancement. He works with business and owners, professional associations. He's an expert in this area. And Paul, you'd started a list of what we call 10 essential insights for a no regrets exit before we went to break. And if I'm correct, I think you knocked off four of the 10. Number one was start early and define your why. Number two was decide on timing strategically. Number three, know your numbers. Number four, get a business valuation using multiple lenses. You want to expand on any of those and then finish your top 10, and then we will indeed, in fact, Susie, get listeners involved before we're done. Paul?
Thanks, Bruce. Just a quick note on getting that business valuation through multiple lenses. You know, the lenses are the process of informal or formal valuations done by professionals. It's not your neighbor. It's not your friend who sold their business. It's not the opinion of your kids, right? It's a formal process to go through. So engage in that formal process and do it every year. It's your only real benchmarking tool as a business owner. So, you know, number five, build a strong leadership team. We talked about that a little bit earlier. And this applies to equity-rich employees as well, right? The people that we surround ourselves, right, it's wonderful if they're better than us. Because together we can work to make that business stronger and make our exit easier, right? It's important to prepare for the emotional side of that transition. When business owners sell and someone else is running that business and they're not necessary anymore, it can be emotionally incredibly challenging. Yesterday you were, right? You were running the world around you. You know, you were the master of your own destiny. Everybody came to you. You were the center of that universe. The day after you sold that, you're not part of that. So you have to have something to go to, and you have to be emotionally prepared for that. I think, too, Bruce, it's important for us to assemble a great advisory team early. A certified financial planner who is a certified exit planning advisor is that one advisor that can be with you before, during, and after a business or professional transition, helping you to prepare your business for that transition, preparing yourself for that transition, preparing your financial plan for that transition. If you're a business owner, then sitting next to you during that transaction, helping you identify the right business broker or the right investment banker or the right M&A advisor, and then afterwards, making sure that that plan is executed and implemented in a very disciplined way that creates really great outcomes for you. Other people to include in that team, certainly your CPA, your M&A lawyer, maybe a family business transition specialist. Yes, they exist. They're often attorneys, and they help us manage through those things. So there's lots of people, what we call a core team, right, and an extended team. And let's make sure we have the right folks in place to help you navigate to a no-regrets exit. You have to communicate strategically with your employees, right, and co-owners and your family, and you've got to do it at the right time. Talking about your exit too early can make people uncomfortable and even think about leaving and going to another job. And that would, what, reduce the value of your business, of that enterprise, because now we have to take a couple of years to train up a new person. So we have to be strategic in our communications, and we have to be strategic about who we include in those communications, and we have to think about framing it in a really positive way, and doing that with trusted voices who can assist in that process. Importantly, number nine, we have to create actual transferable value, and that comes in a lot of ways. Reducing owner dependence, optimizing our systems, building intellectual property, having clean, audited financials, right, and recurring revenue systems. Do we have a wide moat around that business? Is it reasonably unassailable because it's differentiated in the marketplace? Is there a good growth strategy in place? Have you reduced reliance on key customers and key suppliers? That same person who thought they wanted $75 million from that business had three customers that represented 80% of their business, and they had one supplier for the materials that they made, and that supplier was out of China. A buyer sees that as a lot of risk these days. So we have to really think about, right, reducing our dependence on all of those key suppliers, key customers, and key employees. And that helps us create transferable value. And then, of course, understand the financial implications. Having a liquidity event, whether it's highly appreciated stock in a publicly traded company or selling our business, this can be a tax landmine, or it can be a multi-generational opportunity. So we have to think very hard about planning taxes way ahead of time. You know, should I be a C corporation and exercise a 1202C capital gains exemption on up to $15 million of my business value? Should I use charitable giving as part of my tax plan? How do I diversify both asset location and asset allocation to create sustainable cash flow or income to me after I've been in that business? So you get the idea. Those are the 10 things. Right? The 10 things, you know, start early, define your why, be strategic in your timing, know your numbers, get a valuation, have a strong leadership team, prepare emotionally, get your total advisory team together, communicate strategically and timely, create value, become best in class, right, in both profitability and valuation, and understand the financial impact of your transaction.
I think Paul and Bruce, a lot of people that are listening today wouldn't think of going to a financial advisory, you know, during this process. But we at Wealth Enhancement Group provide this service at wealthenhancement.com on our website under services. The drop-down menu says businesses. And it says we not only have retirement plan consulting, but we have business growth and exit planning. We also help with employee benefits programs. So a lot of times the wealth is in that business and there's no outside investments. I mean, once again, it's their baby. They're investing their entire life and wealth into this company. And so I have always encouraged people to come in early. They don't know why, right? But you just explained today in a great fashion as to why you would get started earlier, even with a financial advisor, because they have the resources to help you have the confidence to retire or sell that business one day. Anything to add, Paul?
Yeah, you know, all of our financial advisors who specialize in work, you know, I have a team of financial advisors. We're probably 23, 24 across the country now that specialize in this work. They're all certified exit planning advisors. That professional designation comes from the Exit Planning Institute. And the Exit Planning Institute does every year, they do an annual state of owner readiness. And EPI says that for the first time in the last 10 years, the certified financial planner, who is the certified exit planning advisor, is the number one trusted advisor for business owners, ahead now of CPAs who are second and attorneys who are third. I know that sounds crazy, but if you think about the notion of a no regrets exit, right, aligning our personal financial plan and our business plan with our end game strategy, our why, a certified financial planner who also is trained and experienced in value acceleration and exit planning is the ideal advisor to coordinate the whole process.
Hey, Paul, I can envision some listeners right now thinking, well, that's all really interesting, but I'm not a business owner. It doesn't apply to me. Can you talk just a little bit about, again, somebody that might have a lot of equity in a company, a senior executive in a big company with an ESOP plan? Talk a little bit if there's anything specific in this planning, because that now includes a lot more of our listeners, perhaps, if we include those folks. Anything special, any key takeaways for them?
Sure. Let's talk about somebody with stock options, stock grants, right, and direct equity ownership, maybe through a discounted accumulation plan when you work for a publicly traded company. And very often we see these executives, these middle management folks, have substantial portions of their net worth in a single security. And we know, right? We know that nothing lasts forever, no matter how good our company is. And having that concentration risk in a publicly traded security, even when we work there, introduces a lot of risk to our personal financial situation. And we have to think about creating the most tax-efficient way to diversify away that risk so that we can create consistency and stability of returns in excess of taxes and inflation. There's lots of techniques to help us with that, everything from charitable giving to the purposeful creation of capital losses using long-short strategies. Lots of things, simple and complex, that we can do to reduce our reliance on that single security for our future. I advised Alcoa employees for decades. We provided financial education in the workplace for those employees in their corporate center, their research facility. And we saw people who had 70, 80, 90% of their net worth in their 401k tied up in Alcoa stock. And they were all convinced, Bruce, that it was just going to continue to go up. And when the stock split and then rose again to $95 a share, they were all convinced it was going to $140. And from that particular moment, we watched it decline to $6. And they didn't know why. For those who diversified, they had a really comfortable retirement. For those that didn't, they were forced to continue to work and sometimes at other companies at lower pay. Nothing lasts forever. Let's diversify those positions. Even our ESOP positions, when we have the opportunity to diversify into other publicly traded securities, ETFs or funds, we should take that opportunity because we want to get rid of that single security risk inside of a portfolio.
That's great information, and I've seen that, and I know Peg has too with clients, and I'm not going to go through a laundry list of companies, but I've seen that before. And basically, you know, their argument back to me, Paul, always is, you think your portfolio is going to get me a better return on investment than my ABC stock or whatever the company is?
Right.
And my answer always is not necessarily, but I don't know if we'll enhance return, but I know we're going to reduce risk. And we can still get a competitive, robust return, and we want to reduce your risk. You've got too many eggs in one basket, but boy, when they work for the company and they love the company and they're loyal, it's hard to get them to take action. Oftentimes, unfortunately, like your story you just told, until it's too late. We didn't leave as much time for listeners as maybe I hope, but that's okay. We had really, really good information, Paul, that you shared. But Peg and Paul, I'll give you both a quick moment if you want to get a key last word in for listeners, and then we'll have a little time maybe to get to one or two questions. Peg, anything you want to share before we go to questions?
Well, I love that we have this service at Wealth Enhancement Group because as an advisor, you wear so many hats. And it's so nice to have a specialty at our firm that we can help folks with. And I think probably the biggest aha moment for me is that you truly do have to do it earlier. And you also have to not be embarrassed, because this is what happens too, is that you have this concentrated position or you've lost a bunch of money already with a company and you don't want to face up, you know, to somebody like us and tell us that. So I feel like we're very approachable and we've been here for decades. And so that would be my last point is just don't be afraid to reach out to someone like Wealth Enhancement Group or someone similar. Paul?
Begin with the end in mind. Know your end game. Get a handle on your why and what your next chapter looks like. That will help you align your business decisions with your personal financial decisions. And your business decisions are all about creating an exit-ready, best-in-class value company. When you have that, you have options to transfer that business internally to key employees, to all of your employees, to family members. You have the option to transfer some of that equity to private equity in minority or majority recapitalizations, or even to a high net worth investor, a family office, or a strategic buyer. And importantly, the last option is to elevate yourself to chairperson of the board that has a healthy company that creates a passive source of income to you for the rest of your life. Lots of options when you are best in class in your valuation. Know your end game, become best in class, and have the right financial plan in place.
Paul, that was all excellent information. Susie, we've got 3 or 4 minutes left. We should be able to get in at least one, maybe two questions.
All right, 651-461-9226. This texter writes, I have money distributed between two different investment companies. One has made about 6% to date. The other has made less than 1%. I know they have their investment specialists, but is it worth moving all of my money under one umbrella? Thank you. Love your show.
Peg and Paul, that's actually a really good question. And again, I should mention for listeners, Paul is a financial advisor. His specialty is in working with business owners. But Paul's a full-blown financial advisor. Peg and Paul, thoughts on the texter's question?
Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, I think simplifying our financial lives with an overarching comprehensive plan is the best way to go. We don't really achieve diversification by having two different firms manage assets. Right, we achieve diversification by having asset classes that behave differently at the same time. And you can do that in one place in a much simpler fashion than you can across multiple firms. Our lives are complex enough, right? Unify, simplify. It makes life better.
All right. Six.
Yeah.
You want to add?
Ahead,
no, I was just going to say, you add something and then I'll say the number again.
Oh, okay. So I also agree with that. It is hard, though. Some people feel that the diversity of their custodianship is something that lowers their risk if they're with a couple different companies. Now, in that case, we do review what they have at this other firm. But what I could tell you, Paul and Bruce, is that 99% of the time they end up coming to us because they find out that it's too difficult to do that and have a comprehensive financial plan. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226. If you have a question for Bruce or Peg, this is your opportunity to do so. So recapping that question, Peg, so you're telling, and I should also say Brian, to have your investments all in under one umbrella and not different investment firms. Is that the advice?
Well, especially if you're comprehensive planners and you're trying to create diversity within that plan and the ownership of what you have, entities and stocks and bonds and real estate and all of that, it's just difficult to have a comprehensive plan. Paul, would you agree?
It really is. You find advisors don't talk to one another, and the person who has the investments, who may not be professionally trained, is trying to coordinate things and maybe might not have the expertise or nomenclature to do that. It's like trying to be the general contractor and building an office building when you've never built an office building. It would be hard, right? So work with a professional that can provide comprehensive planning and integrate diversified portfolio management into that plan.
Bruce, Paul, Peg, we're out of time.
Yeah, Paul, thank you for joining us today. We didn't get a lot of time for listeners' questions. I promise I'll devote a lot of time to listeners next week. Susie, as always, thank you also.
Thank you. And if you have financial questions for the speakers, you can call this number 24 hours a day, 1-888-6-ADVICE, or email yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Make it a great day.